I'm Leonard Lopate. Welcome back to my show. John Pearson visited this show 9 years ago to discuss Spike, Mike, Slackers, and Dykes, his book about his experiences in the independent film business. In it, he related how he'd given financial and creative assistance to directors like Spike Lee, Errol Morris, Kevin Smith, and Michael Moore. But then, a few years ago, he and his family took something of a sabbatical and moved to Taviuni, a remote Fijian island, where he took over a theater and showed movies to the local villagers for free. And that is the subject of Real Paradise, a documentary film made by Steve James that opened yesterday at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue in Waverly Place. And I'm very pleased to welcome John Pearson and his wife, Janet, to my show today. Hi.
Hello.
Hey, it doesn't feel like 9 years.
Well, you were off in Fiji. You were doing other stuff.
It feels like 100 years after Fiji.
Janet, didn't this adventure grow out of a segment that the two of you did for Split Screen? That's a cable show on IFC?
It was. We had it for 4 years on IFC. We did 66 episodes. And in the fourth year, John was sort of getting a little wilder in his creative leaps and decided to look for the world's most remote cinema. It was a millennium story and kind of had to do with the first dawn of the new millennium, and it was like, well, how can we show the first movie of the new millennium? So we ended up at the 180 Meridian Cinema, February 2000.
Yeah. 180 Meridian, named after the fact that it's on the international dateline?
Absolutely.
When they did the survey, it looked like the line initially, and again, Fiji is a country where precision is not valued that highly. It appeared that the dateline really literally went right through the site of the theater. When they resurveyed for the millennium, they found out it was 2 kilometers down the road and moved the marker, but it's okay.
By the way, apropos of nothing, Split Screen had one of my favorite segments of all time on cable television, the Christopher Walken cooking segment.
Oh, thank you so much.
I wish that thing were available to everyone. That was one of the great moments in television history.
Can I take a momentary plug time here? We're working on a 3-volume DVD set from Split Screen, the best material, not individual episodes, and the Walken piece will kick it off. I'm very pleased to hear you have seen that.
Well, let's get back to the 180 Meridian. How did this movie theater come to be built in this remote place, or this island where there's, I don't know if there's any electricity. There are no paved roads.
Never been electricity to this day. The road gets a little more paved with each passing year now. A family, an Indo-Fijian family named the Dyarams, had the patriarch of that family, Ambaran, wanted to do something in the jungle, in this very raw agricultural island, to honor the memory of Mahatma Gandhi after he was shot. It happened all over the Indian diaspora, all around the world. And he wanted to build a Gandhi Memorial Hall, but in the process of getting ready to do this, he decided it needed to be a movie theater. And I queried this guy, who was alive and died until the year we were there, and he died near the end of that year. I queried him over and over again in the 5 years I knew him about his reasons for building Fitzcarraldo-like, building a theater in the middle of the jungle, and he would only say 3 words in answer to this question: movies are good.
Except
movies
that
are good.
He was building a movie house in a place where most people couldn't afford to go to the movies. He was showing Bollywood films mostly, wasn't he?
The first movie shown in the theater was a Burt Lancaster film partly shot in Fiji. Can you guess what it was? His Majesty O'Keefe. Not out on DVD, but I think it will be. Warner Brothers, I think, is working on that because I told him they had to. But there were a lot of Bollywood films and a lot of Hollywood films. I think that in the 50s, that island was in its economic heyday. The agriculture was booming. Coconuts were booming. There was a cattle plantation. I think people had more disposable income then than they did, certainly more than they do now.
We certainly heard from our friends who couldn't afford to go before we got there, who went as kids. They would do whatever they could to raise money to go. So,
but you've had your own experience with small movie theaters, Janet. Didn't you work for the Film Forum when it was a much smaller operation than it is today?
Well, yes, but it was its expansion, and that's actually where John and I met. I was working for Karen Cooper, who has always been the creative leader, inspirational force there, from about 81 to 85. I was her assistant, and John was a house manager, but it was when it opened on Watt Street. It was a great experience.
But you know, this whole adventure that is the subject of Real Paradise struck me as odd. It's one thing to make a TV segment about the most remote movie theater in the world. Another thing to move 5,000 miles from home so that you can operate it, especially on an island that has one semi-paved road, no public electricity, where everybody gets dengue fever.
Yeah, sadly, only me. But here's the thing.
Well, others have to get it because dengue fever is one of the most common illnesses in the world, and you caught it from somebody, John.
Actually, I got it from a mosquito, which is what may have bitten somebody before me and after me. But at any rate, let's not talk about that. It's a painful memory.
Do you ever get
especially
over
for
it?
The people around me who I treated a little crankily during the
It's not like malaria. It took him a while, but he got better. But when we went over with Split Screen, it was a life changing experience. We brought over two films. We went over, made the movie theater free. We paid for the bus ride. We didn't know what to expect. We had no idea what we were doing. We'd never been to Fiji before, and it was just this. It was clear when we were there, and John can describe it better, that it was just something so substantial and something so ecstatic in our lives that I knew that wasn't going to be the end of it.
It was all about the audience that first time. It wasn't what we brought, which were a couple of American indie films, which I won't name. It was about what they showed us in the theater before we showed what we brought, which was a Three Stooges short called Some More of Samoa.
Now, that's, if I remember correctly, that is as politically incorrect as any movie could be made and would be considered insulting to people in the
according
South
to the guidebooks.
According to the guidebooks,
but not when you're there.
Yes, according to the guidebooks, never talk about cannibalism in Fiji, formerly known as the Cannibal Isles, but actually they love talking about cannibalism.
One of our favorite restaurants was a cannibal cafe.
And don't touch anyone on the hair either, apparently, although we didn't experience that problem either.
In the movie, they are going to serve curly for dinner.
Yeah.
And people thought that was funny.
Oh, funny is not the word for the reaction. It was the most extreme kind of audience excitement that you could ever see in your life. And yes, a lot of it was driven by these young kids, but it was pretty much all generations from the age of 8. Well, I don't know if you'd laugh at 8 months. From the age of 8 to 80, people just were in stitches, again, isn't the right word. I don't even know how to describe this. Janet's looking at me
I'm
with a glazed over.
No, uproarious ecstasy. I don't know. It was just an experience we never had, and I remember catching John's glance across this room of just like, this is the ultimate.
Well, you would have to assume the Sullivan's Travels moment, you know, in the Preston Sturges film with the chain gang in the church watching the Mickey Mouse cartoon. That's probably something comparable, but I think what you really need to do is probably go back to America at some point in the 30s before any television, really, or other media, when movies were essentially all that people had.
For people who didn't understand the Preston Sturges reference, what you're saying basically is, in the case of that film, Sullivan wants to make art films, and he realizes instead he has to make movies that appeal to a wider public. You went there thinking you'd show these people art films, European art films and American independent films, and you wound up showing movies like The Scorpion King, The Hot Chick, Jackass, the movie.
Unrepentant.
Bringing down the house. Talk about politically incorrect.
Hey, this is a big question, but let's start with where you ended. Bringing down the house, it's a very intriguing thing to think about it. Here, people would go to that movie and say, oh, what a racist piece of garbage. There, they watch Queen Latifah essentially triumphantly winning out over the white man and this big black woman, and they celebrated that film. I'm not sure they could have articulated this, but I'm articulating it for our audience. I think that there was an extra added excitement and satisfaction with that movie because she prevails the way she does. So maybe it's not that simple. They loved any movie with a black character. They love The Rock in Scorpion King or anything else because he is half Samoan. And so there's a real point of identity. Don't underrate that. However, I didn't. After the first trip we took.
But wait, is Rob Schneider a half Samoan?
Hey, man. That's
the cross dressing just seemed to be the ultimate delight for them. They just love
dress.
Nothing more than men, and women's underwear seemed to really be it.
And
totally
then,
true.
And then Jackass, the movie, actually was banned on the archipelago after you showed it. What happened there?
Well, there is a censor board in that country, and we kind of slipped that print past them in the first place. But once they looked at it after we were gone, yeah, they decided it was
too gross and abusive
for our multiracial culture,
society, yeah.
which means that I'm actually a fugitive for showing it.
For the most part, I mean, a couple of different things. You know, we we were showing films that were already in the country. So we had access to what was already playing. There was a big movie theater in the capital city island of Suva. But with Jackass, it was coming in, but we were leaving. So we went out of our way to get it sooner. So we kind of got it before the censor board did.
But didn't you also run into trouble with the Catholic priests on the island?
Yes, we did. And it was an unpleasant kind of we got blindsided. I mean, we should have known that there would be a turf war. I mean, Janet's always pointed this out to me, I think, correctly. But they waited about half a year before going after us. And
what was bothering them, other than the fact that you were showing these movies sometimes during church services?
Well, church was every night. It was 6 out of the 7 days.
Would have been hard not to.
but it was the odd thing was that we were showing movies for free, and along with civilizing their society, they brought capitalism to Fiji, which was sharing society before
that.
Wait,
is that something the Catholic Church promotes? I've never heard that capitalism was one of the tenets of Catholicism.
You have to make yours so that you can give them their 10%, okay?
It seems to work that way practically over there. I can't get into the theology.
Didn't they also say that you were bringing damnation to heaven on earth?
Something along those lines. First of all, they took something I'd written in the LA Times and helped people misread it to the point where they were saying things like, we'd had the Stooges experience, which I'd written about. They were saying things like, this family, Pearson and his family believe that Curly is God. Because I'd said that kind of tongue in cheek, I think in America you would get that. And so people, students at school would come up, not Catholic school, would come up to our kids and go, what religion are you? Where Curly is God. Or, oh, I was a pedophile. I was taking pictures of naked Fijian girls.
They just didn't know. We were
straight. I had murdered somebody in America and run away, which would have been a good one, actually. I'm sorry I didn't.
What about your kids?
You
brought
one
young
second.
Kids there.
Well, we brought teenagers.
That's a rebellious time.
Yes, and our daughter was thrilled to go. I mean, what happened was, we went over in 2000, and then John just couldn't get it out of his mind. And at one point, he was going to go back and write a book on seeing movies at the edge of the world and unmediated culture. And then when he got there, he found out that it turned out that Don Suk, who'd been running the theater for years, was emigrating to New Zealand and was closing the theater. And John was like, how could that happen? This place is too great. You can't close the theater. I'm going to come over and take it over. And so he came back, and of course, but we're a tight family. We're together. So it's like, well, how do I do this? And then, after really thinking about it, we're like, okay, we can do this for a year. And Georgia was like, yeah, great, fun, Wyatt was like, rent the house with me in it. But they both went and loved it, and it screwed up Georgia's schooling. But other than that, it was a life-changing, fantastic experience.
And the person who made the film, Steve James, of Hoop Dreams fame, that he had to move out there as well, didn't he, to do this?
He came in last month. We were there for a year as a family. John had been there longer setting it up and showing movies before we got there, but we were there for a year, and Steve came over our final month to film.
But still, a major commitment.
Yeah, there was a small crew of four, but they totally got in the mix of the culture as well.
For so Steve, it was an exciting thing because it was making a movie in a month. He usually films over 7 years.
That's so
his
true.
Average.
Where do you go after you spent a year in Taviuni?
Well, you come back to New York and you get that cold winter weather and you go, I need somewhere warmer and maybe we can go to a nice college town and teach in a film school. So we went to Austin, Texas. And I'm proud to be a professor at the University of Texas.
And I understand that the next adventure of yours will involve projecting classic films in the places that they were shot. So does that mean North by Northwest at that monument, the National Monument with the four presidents?
You're on point, but in this case, due to the tour schedule, the North by Northwest screening will be in Bakersfield, California, which was the site of the crop duster sequence. But once upon a time...
Well, you're talking about the Rolling Road
Show. It's called the Rolling Road Show. It's the best mobile outdoor projection facility I've ever seen. And the one thing that's really spectacular on that tour, I don't believe there's ever been a movie shown outside in Monument Valley in history.
Wow. You're going to show the Ford films?
Well, The Searchers is out of release until the deluxe DVD next year, which we're going to go back and do. So this time it's going to be Once Upon a Time in the West.
Sergio Leone,
Not bad at all. And then there's a screening of Close Encounters at Devil's Tower, Wyoming as well, and I think those are the two. There's 11 films on the tour, 6,200 miles. Those are the two that people should get out to if they can.
And meanwhile, there's Real Paradise, the documentary directed by Steve James that opened yesterday at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue in Waverly Place. It used to be called the Waverly Theater. My great thanks to John and Janet Pearson for being here today to talk about it.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.